Meet Marlene. The character is fictional. The experience is shared by people across Northeast today. This is their story. In the healthcare sector in Tynemouth, nursing training programs run below capacity while hospitals struggle with staff shortages. The work that is going undone is the fundamental task of connecting people who want to become nurses with the training places that already exist. Marlene's voice tells us what happened when she tried to bridge that gap.
I knew I wanted to be a nurse from the time I was 14, watching how the staff at North Tyneside General cared for my grandmother during her last months. Not just the medical side, though that mattered, but the way they saw her as a whole person. I wanted to be part of that. After my A-levels at Whitley Bay High School, I took a job as a healthcare assistant, thinking 3 years of experience would strengthen my application to Northumbria University's nursing programme. I applied in 2019, convinced I was ready. The university accepted me straight away. Then Health Education England sent a letter explaining that while I met all the academic requirements, there is no funding available for additional training places this year due to Treasury spending constraints. The phrase sat there on the page like it explained everything. I accepted it. Everyone accepts it. Money is finite, after all. I would try again next year. 2020 brought the same letter, almost word for word. I started to wonder if I was missing something, so I called the admissions office. The woman there was kind, but matter of fact. "The government caps the number of funded places," she said. "We get applications from twice as many qualified candidates as we have places for, but we cannot exceed the allocation from Health Education England," she paused. "You should definitely apply again next year." I kept working as a healthcare assistant, but I started paying attention to things I had not noticed before. Like how Bethany, a nurse I met through friends in Hartlepool, would text me after her shifts, exhausted and frustrated. "We had 4 nurses today for a ward that needs 8, she would say. "I did not get a proper break. Nobody did. I saw the job adverts North Tyneside General kept posting for qualified nurses, the same positions appearing month after month. If there was such desperate need for nurses, why could the university not train more? In 2021, I decided to visit the nursing department at Northumbria University instead of just applying online. I wanted to understand what was actually happening. The building was impressive, full of modern equipment and simulation wards that looked exactly like real hospital rooms. I found the head of admissions, Dr. Sarah Mitchell, in her office. She invited me to sit down and was more honest than anyone had been before. 'We have capacity for 40 more students this year,' she said. 'The lecture halls, the clinical skills labs, the placement partnerships with local trusts. We have nursing tutors who want to teach and students who want to learn, but Health Education England will only fund 15 additional places.' She showed me the empty lecture hall down the corridor. 'Those seats could be filled tomorrow if the funding existed.' I asked her to explain what she meant by funding. Dr. Mitchell leaned back in her chair. 'Health Education England receives its budget from NHS England, which receives its allocation from the Treasury. The Treasury treats nursing education as a cost to be controlled, not as an investment in the workforce we desperately need. So they cap the budget and we turn away qualified applicants while hospitals cannot recruit enough staff.' Walking through the nursing building that day, I saw resources sitting unused everywhere. Simulation equipment worth hundreds of thousands of pounds, dormant during the hours when additional students could have been learning, teaching staff with time to mentor more trainees, clinical placement partners ready to supervise more students. The university had even purchased additional textbooks and uniforms, anticipating a larger cohort that never materialised. That afternoon, I drove past North Tyneside General and counted the recruitment posters in the windows. 6 different nursing positions, some marked urgent and competitive salary offered. The contradiction was impossible to ignore. Here was a hospital struggling to recruit qualified nurses, and 3 miles away sat a university with the capacity to train them, prevented from doing so because there is no funding. But funding for what exactly? The building existed, the equipment existed, the teachers existed, the students existed, the hospital placements existed. What was missing? Dr. Mitchell had said the Treasury controlled the budget as though pounds were a finite resource that might run out, but the government issues those pounds. It creates them when it spends. The constraint was not the money itself, but someone's decision about how many pounds to spend into existence for this purpose. I started to see the same pattern everywhere. The government that prints the notes told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing in the queue, ready to work. Empty training places sat next to desperate recruitment campaigns, as though these were two separate problems instead of one political choice being presented as an accounting impossibility. 3 years later, I am still working as a healthcare assistant, still watching the same cycle repeat. New cohorts of students are turned away each year while the same job adverts appear and disappear and reappear. I applied again in 2022 and 2023 and received variations of the same letter about Treasury spending constraints, but I hear those words differently now. The government that prints the money told me it could not find enough of it to connect willing students with empty training places. The logic only works if you believe the government's budget operates like a household budget, where money must be found before it can be spent. But governments are not households. They issue their own currency. They do not need to locate pounds before spending them into the economy. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The limit was not the pounds, but the willingness to spend them into the places and the people who needed them. I understand now that what happened to me was not bad luck or inevitable constraint. It was a series of political choices made by people in the Treasury who had alternatives. They chose to treat public investment as a cost to be minimised rather than as the process by which trained nurses reach the wards that need them. They chose to maintain artificial scarcity in a system with unused capacity. This is not just my story, it is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says, the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. It was locked.
What Marlene experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique works by citing supposed authorities to make false claims seem credible. Think of tobacco companies hiring scientists to claim smoking was harmless, or pharmaceutical companies funding studies that downplayed side effects. The authority of the expert is used to dress up convenient conclusions as objective facts. In Marlene's story, every time someone said there is no funding, they were quoting economists and policy experts who treat the household budget analogy as gospel truth. Health Education England cited Treasury economists. University administrators quoted NHS England advisors. Each institution passed responsibility up the chain to unnamed experts who supposedly proved that government spending must be rationed like household income. But which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation is an appeal to unnamed authority that ignores the economists who disagree. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources. People, skills, materials, time. And in Marlene's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Tynemouth ranks 404 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, published by MHCLG. There are 736 registered charities in Tynemouth, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received in the constituency amount to £31.5 million, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.